is approve the minute.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Right, I have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, opposed? Right, carried. All right, we have two things tonight. One is, the one I wanna start with is 22 Maple. You've got that.
Yep.
All right, 22 Maple, the problem I see with that right off the bat is you're gonna have to get a variance. So you're gonna need to go to the ZBA first.
Okay.
Because everything there right now, as far as the area and the setbacks and everything, is non-conforming, so in order to get that changed, or at least to try and get it changed, you're gonna have to go to ZBA.
Okay, so we're looking for an area variance for them, so if we get that, then come back here for a special permit, but the use seems acceptable to the planning board.
What's the question?
If what we're looking for from them is just an area variance.
Yeah, I mean, if, that would be the first thing that I would look at. I mean, beyond that, I didn't see anything that, you know, made any whistles or bells go off with the area and the setbacks.
Okay, so if we get that approved by the ZBA, this general concept seems.
Then come back.
We're going with it, okay.
Can I bring up another issue? It's something that I think the planning board is going to have to decide, because this is a case where the current building is not in conformance with the zoning. In other words, it's overgrown.
Mm-hmm.
So we're then approving yet another unit, so making that non-conformance even worse. So, and that's fine because it falls under ADU. But the question is, parking is getting removed, some parking is getting removed, and there isn't enough parking for the total number of units. So how is the planning board resolving that? Because this will set a precedent, because we have 4 and 5 unit buildings in Philmont, and a lot of people are coming to us with ADUs, so we need to.
Right, but before we need to address that, really, they need to come to us with a plan that conforms, at least with, you know, the area and the setbacks.
Right, but the question came up. They asked, well, are we then good to go?
Oh, that I don't know.
Okay.
That I don't know.
Okay.
Because when you come back, at least you'll have a conforming, you know, area that we can then talk about lighting and parking and all that kind of thing.
But yeah, I think that was the question, if that's going to be an issue, but it sounds like that will.
Parking could very well be an issue.
Mm-hmm. Parking, yeah. Yep. So we're not removing parking, but understood, yeah.
But we're kind of understanding that there's a garage, and so there's two spaces there, the space is in front of it. So in a way, you are removing parking, but.
We are not actually using the garage for parking now, are we?
Oh, the inside of the garage? Oh, that's not, I mean, it's not being used, it's not really usable.
I don't think it's ever been used for parking.
Right.
We need one spot per unit, what's the general?
It's two spots, right? How many spots per unit is it?
They're gonna need two spots.
Yeah, right.
Right, we're definitely not conforming with that.
Right.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
We'll come back next time.
Thank you. All right, now moving on to 27 Summit. I think what we need to do is have Paul and Brandy go over the things that they've done. And I mean, I have a copy of the email with Paul's notes and with Brandy's reply. So if we could just go over that. I'd like to hear more about, for instance, first start with the environmental physical study.
Do you want to respond to my stuff, or should I announce what I had questions on?
I think it makes sense for you to explain what your questions were, and then we can explain where we are in response, because some of it is in progress.
Sounds good.
I just have one question before we start very quick. Was the full assessment, has that been issued? The full assessment form? Because there's a lot of response that's
being made. That's one of our questions. questions is whether or not you need the full environmental assessment form reissued. We have issued one. It was part of an earlier application package. But my question, there were two small things. Do you just want us to say, yes, we agree with these small changes that Paul recommended, or do you need us to reissue the whole form? Either way, we can make it happen. I just need clarity on that before the end of the night.
So it has not happened. I just want to establish it has not happened yet.
We have not reissued it.
Yeah.
We initiated it initially.
Okay.
And the board has certainly taken no action on the full environmental assessment form.
Yeah, okay.
So.
Okay.
No.
But just to give a little summary instead of reading off of what I sent to you, I'm a little bit confused as to where the locations were taken for sound measurements, particularly with the outside, the grotto area, because there were dimensions that went from the grotto area all the way to homes, and the code really speaks to only the property line. And one of the things about this building is, okay, let's face it, it hasn't been touched much in many, many, many years, so there's broken windows. They did their best to try and cover up what I would call sound holes, but that building in its current state is not going to act like the finished building where the interior is completely renovated, and they may be adding some, not only, obviously they need to add insulation in the building because that's a code requirement, but for this, they may be also adding some sound deadening materials. So the real proof in that pudding, so to speak, is going to be the post-construction sound study. And if that's the case, then I would think the applicant and the planning board really need to nail down the details of how that works. And you know, the off chance that some sort of noise inside gets too loud, how does that adjustment happen?
Randy, how does that adjustment happen?
Well, so, I mean, our experience previously, and I'll just say for the record, we didn't perform the noise assessment. There was a third-party consultant that did it, but that's specifically what the type of work they do all the time is. And so I would say typically we find that the results of those studies are pretty conservative when you do the infield testing. I would say the most common means of adjusting the sound, if the test shows that post-construction you have an exceedance, is to limit the sound generation level inside the building, which is done through a number of different means, either with changing hours of operation or with sound limiting devices that actually don't allow the equipment to exceed a certain sound level.
Does that sound to you, Paul?
It all sounds good, but then I also get concerned about how do you apply that after the building's up? Who's in control of that? How do you check that? If you're gonna get a complaint, you have to verify is the complaint real? So, I don't know if you all have a sound meter that will measure on this type of level to be able to check things like that. So, you know, enforcement is, it's going to hinge funny on enforcement.
All right, so what you're saying is that we have to find a way to enforce the noise ordinance, which is on our books already. Is that correct?
Yes. Because like I said, if I assume the complaint would come into the building department, and then what do you do with that? If there is a sound limiter inside the building that does either automatic adjustments or, you know, there's someone inside that, you know, they monitor things and it's like, hey band, turn it down. You know, it's a difficult little situation, and I just want to make sure that the planning board understands what those ramifications are and the applicant, and come to some agreement of how that can happen well for the village.
I'll offer, because we've done this now a couple of times, a post-construction test pre-issuance of a certificate of occupancy is something that could be a condition on the approval. At which time, again, the noise consultants we've been working with, they can specify a particular type of limiter and a level to be set, so that level gets set at the time that post-construction noise testing is completed. And then that's just like a fixed piece of equipment. So, you know, we'd be amenable to that. That's something that we've seen a handful of times, even here in Columbia County. We're working on a project in Hudson right now that's got some similar conditions on it. So that's pretty common. And I just will, for the record, just Paul, because you probably don't have the backstory, because it's probably buried deep in some minutes somewhere, but we do recognize that the noise ordinance point of compliance is at the property line. There had been some public communication to the board prior to us doing the noise testing where people were concerned about how loud is it going to be in my backyard in the summertime, for instance. So in that instance, and also partially because the building is the property line, particularly on the east side, we expanded the points where results were calculated to sensitive receptors, so the adjacent and abutting properties.
Okay.
And the only reason we took a reading not at the property line near the grotto was to see what the ambient sound of the waterfall is from an area that's going to be used, because one of our small concerns we had raised is at times when the water flow is at its highest, the ambient sound of the waterfall can exceed the noise ordinance itself. And we wanted to make sure, as well as protecting the town from anything the village, anything we're doing, we also make sure that is known. So if we're not projecting any sound and someone says something's at 60 dBs and it's the waterfall, we're not dealing with any just silliness on that front.
So the study has two solutions in it. One you've already mentioned, so I think it's just a matter of changing the language. It says in the case of measuring the noise level within the facility, it says can purchase. It should preface this with, I think no matter what you do, you're going to get complaints because this building has been silent for decades. So just the fact of PEEP coming out of it could generate a complaint. So what we're trying to do is, how does that get handled? So I think number one, having the, as you suggested, a noise study done once everything's in place, because quite frankly, some of the assumptions here are pretty wild. How to predict what was going to happen once the building is completed. And I think just to get rid of all that, do the study once the building's completed.
With all due respect, just because there are people here, you've hired a third party consultant. He did not conclude that the assumptions are wild. So I think we should be careful about characterizing anything we've done outside of a professional opinion. It feels a little reckless, especially if this is going in the mix.
Fine, I'll take that back.
Thank you.
Put it in the language that we need to study once the building is completed. And we'll see what that says.
That's great.
That solves that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is, it says can provide a noise level meter within the facility, and then they talk about lights and all the ideas of how that will work. Can we change that to will? That you will have some kind of noise level machine inside the facility?
So I guess, Mr. Chairman, we're presenting information and alternatives. We would anticipate working with the board and the engineer and the attorney to come up with conditions on the approval. I don't think we disagree with those as conditions on the approval. You know, but I think noise limiting, we don't want to say it's required right out of the box. It may not be. We believe, based on our study, noise limiting equipment may not be required. So I wouldn't necessarily want to mandate that as a condition. I think it is, if sound levels as predicted can't be achieved, then. So it's an if then statement, not a mandate.
I think I was misheard.
Okay.
I didn't say noise limiting. I said it says noise level. Equipment that measures the noise level. I didn't say anything about noise limiting.
I misunderstood you.
So I would like that to be a stronger statement that will be provided. And the only reason for that is because there's certainly complaints are gonna come in, and we have to address how we're countering that, how we're providing what the code says.
We'll follow up. We'll have to talk to our consultant, but I don't know if that's integral in the equipment, or if that's something separate, so.
It doesn't need to be. We have a calibrated noise meter we can leave in the building and donate it to the village, because we can read something from inside, but we're not, if a complaint happens, it's not about what's happening inside. So it's happening at the property line. So I think we're happy to gift the piece of equipment that you guys can come and test it.
Well, this is in the paragraph that says this is how the user of the building can put some controls. In other words, they can turn down the noise level once they see that the meter is saying, whoa, you're up there, you're in the red zone.
The spirit of, I think what we're trying to say is the study that we're going to do post-construction will accurately represent the parameters we need to put permanently in place.
Yeah.
So the need for us to buy a noise limiter or a noise reader to have on hand at all times is unnecessary, because once we say the speakers cannot go above a certain noise level, it should never reach X amount of decibels outside. I think we've already established the methodology we've used the sound for Paul's report, and we're happy to provide equipment. At that time, once the design is complete, it will be more important, I believe, for the village to have a piece of equipment to enforce the noise ordinances around the entire village.
That's correct.
That's my only point. It's not an integral piece, it's a handheld device that is calibrated. So, you know, there's cheap ones and there's nice ones.
Right, so that's why the first request was to do the study once the building is complete.
Yes.
We'll have those numbers.
Yeah.
And if you'd like, we can say, and then based on that study, if it looks like it could exceed at certain times, then you would need this noise level meter equipment. Providing the village with sensitive receptor noise meters, they're expensive. I don't know if that's exactly practical, but I think the onus should be on who's providing the noise. So I think we're in agreement that we need that study first, and if the study shows in any way that it's borderline, then we may need this other.
Yes, I think we don't want any ambiguity in the language. We are going to prove, as we have in the first test, that we're compliant with the noise ordinance, and the system we're installing will not be outside of that. And I think the goal is to not be ambiguous or say, oh, it's borderline. We're going to design a system and have a limiter on that clearly keeps it below an A grade level. So that's, I think, sincerely, it's our commitment to.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to parking. Shared use parking at the Choo-Choo lot. And you said you had a purchase agreement for the lot up on Summit Street, is that correct?
Yeah, so we have terms agreed on, we have an LOI signed, we should have a contract signed within the next couple of days.
All right, because we're gonna need to see that.
You need to see the actual contract?
Well, we need to know that you bought it.
Yeah, we will confirm that the contract has been executed.
Yeah, I mean, it's none of our business how much you pay for it,
yeah.
but it is our business since you did pay for it and bought it.
Yes.
Paul, do you have any input on the parking?
Well, I guess my big concern is and maybe this has already been done by the board, I haven't seen anything that convinced me there's enough parking.
Enough for what? Because we've laid it out in tiers, right? Like small, medium, and large. And we've been very clear throughout the process that we don't at this point in time have sufficient adjacent parking for the large event. So we're recognizing that and saying what we have been able to do is secure parking for the small and medium events with the objective of using the 49 Summit Street off-site parking as the primary location, and then the additional parking at the proposed Canal Street lot. And then we know there is some other smaller amounts of parking throughout the village that are available for use on an intermittent basis.
Okay, I just wanna make sure the board's good with that.
It's a challenging site, right, cause as you know,
Well, yeah, there's nothing at the site.
There's nothing other than the two handicap spaces at the site, so.
So can there be some more clarification, cause you're counting 100% use of the public parking area, which is unrealistic. That there's already, the reason, what generated putting in that parking in the first place was because of other projects going on that would be using it at the same time. So you really need to be using a percentage of that parking lot. So that combined, I know you've got this other parking lot, there's still a shortage, but I'm not hearing how is that shortage going to be handled. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
So we have, I feel like we have elaborated many, many times on this. So a 300 person event is not expected to be something that's occurring 365 days.
Wait, before we finish. So it says, I don't know if this is coming from your business plan, but there'll be 90 events a year.
I'm the consultant, so I didn't put together the business plan.
Well, I'm just reading what's in the document.
Sure.
So it says 90 events a year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 1.75 a week. So this isn't something that's happening rarely. It could be happening on a weekly basis.
Sure.
So what percentage of those 90 events will be the full house?
If only I could predict that. I really don't know. Did you do predictive modeling to estimate what size events are gonna occur when?
No, but let's go the crazy route. Let's say it's 50 weeks or 300 person. 50 events are of the 90 or 300 person. We have been pursuing this process with you for many months with the understanding that the calculation that we are going to use with 100% of the municipal parking plus absolutely every piece of parking we can find elsewhere. Are you now saying that that is not the understanding?
It can't be. It's a public parking lot. You're going to kick the parking, the people that are parked there already out?
What we have been discussing,
yeah.
Like from the get-go.
The mayor said very clearly that's the way we want it to be, and it's been discussed here 3 or 4 different times. So now you're going to say that's not going to be acceptable to the planning board?
No, what this gentleman just said is exactly what I told them. That they are able to use all the spots in that municipal lot against their zoning regulations.
And we understand the question.
Well, Rick, can I hear from the mayor some more? And then what happens if there's cars in the lot?
Then they'll have to find other places to park. But they are able to use those spots against their zoning regulations.
Okay, but in all due respect,
I know what you're saying, Tom.
Okay.
I know what you're saying.
Okay.
The other thing we do want to say, because we're in the moment we're trying to answer questions, but we, I hope, have come and proven that we're trying to be responsible to what we're trying to do and the size of the town and the parking. We have found 53 other spots so far in counting. We have committed, I think, to have actual live people during these larger events, monitoring the parking. We hope to have events larger than we even have parking available. We'll do off-site parking. We have the traffic studies for shuttles. So all we can do is continue to commit to work with you to be responsible, but we also are gonna be at an impasse. We can't get to some of these more specific questions until we get through this too. So there is a back and forth, and I appreciate the questions, but right now, we feel very comfortable with the 103 spots, roughly, that we have for 300-person events, and it will be great for the village if that parking spot is used by more than us.
How many do you have on Summit Street?
It's 53, as I think.
Yeah.
And 49, which we're counting at the municipal lot, is that correct?
Yeah, 49.
Well, I don't know. The number has vacillated between 47 and 60.
Yes, it might be 47.
I had I have several notations just on this page from discussions this group has had, so.
The last design, I believe, was 46 or 7, and then we had 53. So if we're off by one spot on the 300, we can address it at that time. Oh, but we have.
We've got two ADA spaces as well,
yeah.
So that's 100.
Right, because last I heard of it, it was 49.
It was 49, but I believe in the last meeting I went to, it went down to 46 or 47, but it's not below that.
Anyway, yeah.
This is helpful because what we'll do for the public hearing is we'll have a little synopsis that summarizes where the parking is, just to try and make it clear, because there has been a really wide-ranging discussion about number of spaces available, et cetera. So we'll tie that down.
Just to reiterate, so, you know, we started this process, we only had a municipal lot. We promised that we'd try to find more parking, and we found this other lot. We do think there's a couple of solutions that we have in the works, and but right now we're only trying to commit to, you know, in terms of what's as of right, it is based on these two parking lots, and we feel very strongly over the next year or two we're going to find some other solutions. But we kind of, as Alex said, just need to get through this process. And as Tom said from the very beginning, you gotta come back to us with something. So we doubled the amount of parking that we could find just so we can get through this process, get our, you know, our documents together, move this process forward. But we by no means think this is over. We think there's gonna be some other solutions coming down the line. We just wanna have it approved for these 300 person events so that we can kind of move the ball forward.
I think that's been pretty clear all along. Right, vehicular traffic, all input?
Well, just to verify several things that the applicant has already done, using various website viewers that are available to me from the Department of Transportation, I verified the number of vehicles that are on the various streets where the DOT has actually performed counts. I think what they've done is reasonable. Just to give you the, you know, the bottom line. And I threw in there, maybe if you can figure out what the delays might be, then the planning board has an idea of what's gonna happen on the road. Because if I told you, oh my gosh, it's a level of service C, you know, maybe I'm the only one that knows what level of service C is. But if you know you have to wait 10 seconds to make a left turn,
oh.
Or before you maybe waited four. You've got a level of understanding of, you know, what will happen traffic-wise if you choose to drive through when there's an event. Because I'm pretty sure everybody is gonna know when an event is gonna be happening at this facility. So, if were it I'd say, I'll go Church Street.
So you think their assessment then is accurate?
I believe they've done a nice job on that.
Okay. Now, when you do have events, you guys know that you have to supply any of the security type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The village is not going to supply any of that.
No, and I think in the public hearing we'll spend time talking through how we plan to do that with a little detail. You know, we're not the event professionals here, but.
Okay, so the thing that, Paul, I'm just concerned in your analysis, congestion doesn't seem to be addressed. And I think it's not addressed because we think of that in terms of dozens or hundreds of vehicles all at once. But congestion on Summit Street, I'm not going to mention any names, but a new business has cropped up and the parking occurs on Summit Street. And that provides an obstruction. Because Summit Street just has two traffic lanes, no shoulder, no pull-off. So I am still confused as to how the congestion occurring at this location, congestion in this case would be three vehicles. A jitney comes along, someone needs to be dropped off in a wheelchair, you have another jitney from the other parking lot, that's gonna obstruct Summit Street. So did you look at that in those terms? What are the number of pedestrians that are going to be right at this point? What are the number of jitneys? I mean, I've done my own chart to try and figure it out.
I have not looked at anything that specific, but what I have looked at is I'm gonna try and phrase this as best I can. There's two things you think about when there's a potential traffic issue. Let's use an intersection as an example. If you've got curbs and sidewalks, you know, two lanes of traffic, maybe one foot or 2 foot of, not really shoulder, but the distance between the white line and the curb, there's not much you're gonna be able to do with an intersection like that. You know, you can say, oh, it'd be better to have a, you know, a dedicated right turn lane. But you got no place to put it because there's a building in the way, the sidewalk's in the way, there's a lot of relocation. You're not gonna displace somebody just for that. So you almost have to boil it down to what can you really do. That type of philosophy with the site itself is limited in terms of what can be done there. Frankly, they've done a good job in doing what they've done in that area. Will there be the occasion when, I think you used the term jitney?
Yeah, that, well, whatever it is.
Well, no, I liked it, so I wanted to repeat it.
Okay.
Let's say there's a little bit of jockeying for position with a couple of the jitneys. Well, then, yeah, traffic will slow down.
No, it stops. If you get on Summit Street, the jitney has to get however many people out of it, and that's going to take some time. And the other one comes along, and a piece of it's going to be out in Summit Street. It blocks it. It's not. We're not talking about a slowdown situation here. It gets blocked. It's happening right now with this small business on Summit Street. So,
well, I guess with regard to their site is all I can really speak to, just because I don't know about this other site, but
well,
they've allowed the ability to pull in. There's some jockeying on the site, not in the roadway.
Yes, correct.
So there may be the time when two are there that they might have to do a little extra jockeying. I think they've done a good job with what they have on the site for that particular piece of the project puzzle. And, you know, might there be a little bit of a slowdown? Sure. But I'm pretty convinced they slow down around that curvature anyways, because you really can't see from the road. I've driven it several times and thought, wow, I wish they hadn't put the road there.
Right. But that's the other issue. You've got the crosswalk right in the blind spot. And I...
Well, except they will have advanced warning signs, and there will be the yellow flashing
correct,
lights.
But
so
there's this very easy solution is to just put a sidewalk on the side of the street where you don't have these pedestrians crossing it twice. It's a really bad solution.
There's no room. There's physically not room to have the sidewalk on the other side of the street.
What do you mean there's no room?
On the west side of Summit Street.
Going from the entry point towards 217, there's no
49 Summit is our primary parking. That's where guests will be directed to park first. So
okay.
That's our primary parking.
Are you saying no one's going to park in the public Canal Street parking?
I don't know what choices people will be making, but they will be parking first. That's the whole goal and the whole discussion with the village is, as Alex just said, was to try to work cooperatively with the village on the parking solution, but find a primary parking solution that the mill can have some dedicated parking. So that would be filled first.
Correct.
So we have looked at the sidewalk across the bridge and on the west side. There's just not any room there because of the way the building is situated with the guardrail and the stormwater infrastructure, etc. And we actually had our traffic engineer take a look at the location of the proposed crosswalk below Lakeside Drive. And her recommendation was to move it towards Elm Street because of the lack of visibility when you are coming downhill from Summit Street. So, and use the rapid flashing beacon. So there's a really large multitude of factors that need to be sort of weighed and considered, and we've tried to find a middle ground that allows us to install improvements in an optimal location given the proposed use that's gonna occur at the mill. So that's the rationale for it.
I think it's great that you're encouraging walking. It just seems to me it would be a lot greater if there was something to walk on the appropriate side of the street. We can't say in one breath that, oh, we need the full parking lot on Elm Street, and then say, oh, well, it's not going to be used. I understand the priority will be the one to the south. Still, the other one is going to be used, and if you can possibly keep those people on that same side of the street, you're talking about a good number of people in a 15-minute period who are going to end up walking in the traffic lane. There is no other place to walk. So to avoid that at all costs, it just seems to me that's a pretty simple solution. And I agree with you to put the crosswalk in the safer place, not right at that blind spot.
But isn't that private property?
Well, the fire hydrants get there. There are two fire hydrants on what you're calling private property. Most private property is usually a right-of-way between the edge of the road and the private property line. So however the fire hydrants got there, whatever method that was, you can use that same method to put a sidewalk in there. And just because that would alleviate so much of what's gonna happen here, if it was strewn out over a number of hours, I wouldn't be saying anything. It's the rush of people all at once that's going to happen in this very, very tight
location. But is that their responsibility to do that sidewalk, or is that the village? Is that something the village should do?
That may be a public-private type of. I would like to bring it up that that's a solution, and then try and figure out how to do it. And yes, the village is already getting public money to put sidewalks in. Of course, that might be a possibility. But I think it's something that should be looked at. It will, you know, help your case to have a sidewalk in the appropriate location.
There was a time in this village when we had just a shit ton of kids. I mean, there was kids everywhere. And they all walked up that road and crossed that road to go up to the beach for the afternoon festivities. And I don't think any kid ever got hit. And now we're talking about adults, and we're saying that adults don't have the common sense to cross that same road. Tom, I think it's unreasonable to ask them to put a sidewalk in.
I'm not in a position to make a decision like that. We've not evaluated the right-of-way. We don't know if there is, in fact, a right-of-way. I think, Tom, you're referring to a 50-foot right-of-way being created. My experience in old communities is that there's not necessarily a 50-foot right-of-way. That's a more modern convention. So we've obviously not conducted surveys of the adjacent properties to see what the right-of-way width is there, and so we're just not in a position to comment on that at the moment, unfortunately. We'd like to use the existing infrastructure, and we're proposing to make crosswalk and signage improvements, and those are related to the increased intensity of use, and I think that that's sufficient. That's my personal opinion.
But your own report says the existing infrastructure, there are telephone poles in the way.
Oh, I understand, but that is the village's existing infrastructure. So
right.
There's never a scenario where a development proposal comes in and is responsible for upgrading all of the infrastructure.
Absolutely.
We're making incremental improvements that are related to the intensity of use that we're proposing to bring.
Right, and I'm not asking you to do that. I'm just, you're bringing in a situation and you're, you know, bringing up the school kids. That's great to show that Beaumont had a lot of pedestrians at one time, but it's trying to accommodate them in a way that will put fewer people in danger. It's going to be nighttime. It's particularly the rush leaving the facility. It just seems to me it would make sense to provide the safest way to do that.
Okay.
and it's not an expensive proposition. It might be difficult to figure out, yes, who owns what, but.
I think we know those property owners. I think it'd be a long discussion with them too. I mean, because I think everyone agrees, like, it'd be great if there's a sidewalk on that side of the road, if there's a way to do it. I think it'd be tricky also with those property owners. So I mean, it's definitely something that the village can explore.
Well, I'd like to see the village do that, if it's possible. Like I said, the fire hydrants got in there. How did they get in there?
We'd like to move those.
They'd like what?
So we'd like to move those, actually.
Oh, well, that's right. There's enough room for a fire hydrant and a fire.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, have you talked to the wastewater superintendent? Do you have, I mean, has he agreed that there's plenty of, and I know there is.
So we're having just a little, like, maybe technology and communication challenge there. We've contacted him a number of times on the phone. He's said there are no current moratorium on connections or any issues. He's aware we're contributing additional flow. We've drop materials off here at the village for him to pick up. We've asked him if he could please write us back something so you've got something for the record, but we've not received anything yet. I'm honestly not sure how to get a letter out of him.
You're not gonna get a letter out of him.
I just printed the, they sent like a map or whatever.
Yeah.
I printed all that and
yeah.
I made a big one so he can see everything.
Okay.
I believe he's scheduled to come in tomorrow to the office.
Okay.
I just did it like late last week. I just got it. So I believe he's coming in tomorrow to the office, so
okay.
He should be looking at it then.
Yeah, you'll get a letter from me, but you want to get a letter from me.
Okay.
But yeah, that's,
is that something
coordinate
you would
with
like
him
from
and
the
once
record?
He looks at it.
I mean, we're aware of the process that is undertaken when you contribute additional flow to a municipal system. You have to work with the system operator to upgrade through the DEC. We've said from the outset that we're aware of that, here are our flows, we've talked with Cliff, you know, we just haven't been able to get a letter back from him. So I guess you could take my word for it, and if the mayor's talked to him.
Well, I know that Rob did the math on it last time, and the amount of usage is negligible, really.
Yeah, we're talking a few thousand gallons compared to the plant's, you know, a couple hundred thousand gallon capacity.
What do you anticipate as far as environmental issues?
We are not anticipating any environmental issues.
To be specific, we had a phase one report that said we should do a hazardous material report, and we did not need to do a phase two report. We've now done a hazardous material report. It's shown some hot material on the roof. Some hot material on like a paper layer between the subfloor and the finished floor on the third floor, and a little bit of asbestos on the back of the furnace, and a little pile of asbestos somewhere in the middle of the cellar area that we're not using, and obviously lead paint. So we have a preliminary scope of work to abate all of this, which we're not going to use because we're going to rebid it, you know, 6 months from now when we start work, and that's it. I mean, actually, the report's much better, including soil testing, than we thought it was going to be given that.
So just to be clear for the record, when you say hot material, you mean asbestos material.
Yes.
So there's different types of asbestos building materials, but it's not uncommon for it to be in roofing felts and paper backings on flooring material. So that's, they found asbestos in a few building materials, and that will have to be abated. You're familiar with the abatement process. That all has to be done consistent with the Department of Labor permit, and they have to hire a licensed contractor to do the abatement work prior to any of the construction activity on the site.
And when we clean or encapsulate the lead paint, it's just a painter that is licensed to deal with existing lead paint conditions.
And that's all done through your building department?
Yeah.
Not, you know, the I'm assuming the environmental stuff you're asking about has to do with the site.
Exactly.
So that's just something you need to do with the building department, and that's that, so.
And because the phase one environmental site assessment didn't show any need for a phase two, phase one environmental site assessment is usually looking for things like chemical hazards, petroleum hazards, spills, dumped waste, anything like that that might be associated with the industrial use of the property. That came back not requiring a phase two. We've also checked the DEC's records. There's no, you know, record that the site has ever been listed for any kind of contamination issue. So that being the case, on top of that, I can say our company has, for design purposes, done a number of test pits around the property. As I'm sure you all are not surprised to hear, there's a lot of shallow rock, but where there is spill, it's an earthen fill material, and we didn't identify any contamination in our excavation activities. So I would say, really, aside from the asbestos and the lead, which we would expect in a building of that age, there's nothing that gives us concern.
And you guys are doing some kind of abatement with that stuff anyway, right?
Yeah.
Any input on that, Paul?
In environmental impacts in general? Well, there's some things that very definitely, because I'm assuming the board wants to go with the full environmental assessment form in terms of your assessment. And again, I'll just throw these out as information for the board. You are the keeper of the goodness of the environmental assessment, but I want to give you good enough information to help you with that decision as you move along. I mean, the first question has to do with impact on land. And yes, it's going to impact the land. They have some landscaping things they want to do on site. They have some vehicular things that they need to do on site, the transformer area, the dumpster, etc. Very small site, there's not a lot of stuff going there. I will ask the magic question. There's nothing happening with regard to excavation or fill on the Summit Street parking area that you're going to be used?
No.
That's going to be used as is. Then they don't even have to deal with a full stormwater pollution prevention plan because they're well under 1 acre of disturbance. All their disturbance happens on site and it's minimal. Actually, the biggest impact they have is going to be rehabilitating that building because it's got a few days on it. Beyond that, you know, there's no geological features in that area that they would be impacting. They seem to feel there's impact on surface water. I don't, but if they feel they're impacting it, I'll bow to that. Any impact on groundwater really has to do with the wastewater treatment plant. You know, they're going to be hooking into an existing municipal system. The system already has capacity to allow that to occur. So, will they be taking ground more? Will the village be taking more groundwater out because they're here? Yes, but it's within what you're able to do, so it's not really a major impact at all. There's no impact on flooding. There's no, in my opinion, real impact on air. No impact on plants and animals, mainly because there's nothing that's any sort of specialized flora fauna in that area. You don't have any anything that would the DEC would be concerned about. You know, will the deer still show up? Probably. There's no impact on agricultural resources. I guess you could say there's an impact on aesthetic resources, but that would really be the building. And I think the building's going to be improved, so is it really an impact? No. You might see some changes, but since I understand that you're doing everything under the New York State Historic Preservation, mm-hmm. they are going to hold their feet to the fire so that the windows look like the windows used to look. They might have some structural things that they have to do, and then they will have to beg, please forgive, but we need the building to stand up. and this device has to go in here, and you might see a star on the outside holding the brick together. They usually understand that, but it will be a little bit of a fight for them, but that's their bat. Obviously, there's, I guess, an impact on historic and archaeological resources, because you're in a historic district there. It's a historic building, but they have to do everything according to Hoyle. But the good news is, in reading your the various documents the village has, that's exactly what the village wants to have happen there, some sort of adaptive reuse. So it fits in with everything that you're hoping for. There's no real impact on open space or recreation, which again is another one of the questions. And there is not a critical environmental area near that site. The closest one might be Greenport. There's several in New Lebanon, but they're even further away. So there's no impact on those. Transportation, we're waiting for a little bit more information so that the board has a better feel for what kind of delays we're looking at, and that will help you with that decision. Is there an impact on energy? Yes, but anytime you try to revive something or build something new, you're going to draw more electricity, and that's really what that's all about. The power system in that area is as fine as the power company thinks it is, and there's obviously a transformer that you need to install to be able to make sure that everything hits the building correctly and there's no serious deterioration of the existing system.
Can I just mention one on that topic? So Philmont does have the New York State Energy Stretch Code requirement, so that tells you how much energy per square foot you can use.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And again, most of that has to do with the building itself, because they'll have to do different methodologies of insulation and making sure that they match that part of the building code. What this means is they could actually use more energy if you didn't have that, but they will be to the limit of that section, that special section of the building code. So that's all good news. Impact on noise, odor, and light. It's up to the board if you want to see what sort of lighting that they're actually putting around the building, so that you can at least have a good idea if there's going to be any light spill. That's, you know, to the board's discretion. I know the lighting that they're proposing is going to be minimal, and that's mainly because they don't have a parking lot up there. That's where the predominant lighting usually happens is when that's involved. Noise is something that apparently you all have been working on a little bit, and seems like you're coming a lot closer together tonight, and that's something that can be ironed out to ensure that noise is not an issue, and they really don't generate anything that may have significant odors for long periods of time. And there really wouldn't be impact on human health. And I will say that it seems consistent with community plans and even community character, because I would debate the mill may have been there a long time before some of the other residences in the area. But that's the way I see what's happening environmentally.
So really no red flags?
I don't see any red flags, and you just need a little bit more information about noise and some sign-offs from others within the village, so that everybody understands where you're all connected and good with everything.
Yeah, I think it was Rick who brought up not part of the EAF, but it's not the capacity of the sewage, it's the connections, because the building probably let its waste just go into the stream.
It's quite likely.
Now it can't do that anymore. So when you have this number of people using the building, it's going to be the connections. That's probably a building department issue. I don't know where that gets addressed. The infrastructure capacity, it's not the capacity at the plant. It's what's going on in the street.
Well, Really, that's just your service connection to the main. And that's pretty much a standard detail. As long as your wastewater person has said thumbs up, then you're good to go.
And we're already showing on our utility plan that we're proposing to replace the service connection that exists now, which does, for the record, go from the building to the sewer line in Summit Street, will be replaced with a new 6-inch pipe.
Yeah.
So that's an enlargement or the same?
No, a new 6-inch pipe, just replacing
it. Oh,
a
whole new, yeah, yep. Okay, great.
Yep.
Okay.
Just so we know that we have a new pipe that
yep.
connects.
Okay.
Any other questions? I think we've covered just about everything we've talked about for seems like months.
Thank you.
All right, so the next step would be, do we want to move this to a public hearing? So I would need a motion to move this to a public hearing.
Second.
Just second, Tom?
Yeah.
All right, a motion and a second to move this to a public hearing, which will be next month.
March
25th.
March 25th.
March 25th.
25th? Okay. That's a different than your normal meeting date?
Yes, because we have elections in March, which would
yes,
be the same.
Of course, okay.
Yeah. Now, there's one other housekeeping thing I think we need to get out of the way so we don't get sued right off the bat. You guys are okay with waiting until next month for us to give you a negative deck on the environmental stuff, if we should in fact do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did I cover that, Rob?
Yes. I was going to ask Brandy if she had any objections to that.
No objection. No, that's fine.
Does that gives you the opportunity if people want to comment on the environmental issues in the public hearing, they can.
And can we get a copy of the SEAF then?
Yeah, I think. Did we come to a conclusion whether it's going
to
be revised?
Yes.
Probably would be best, right?
Okay,
yeah.
So make the two changes that Paul requested and reissue. Okay.
All right, we're going to need proof that you bought the parking.
Yep.
Hmm?
I've made a list of all those things, so I think I've got it. Maybe I can just recap it with Paul, you know, tomorrow
absolutely.
Or something. What time on the 25th? Is that at 7 p.m.?
So the normal time, yeah.
By my watch.
Yeah. So just to clarify, so you won't have gone through the purchase then? We'll be in the contract.
Yeah.
We'll be in the contract for the parking by then. So you won't have actually closed out to be there.
Yep.
Yeah, all I hear is you need to know that it's not a lease. You
yes.
need to know that you want it. I mean, a lease, if you want to be unethical about it, you can lease for a week.
Yeah.
Paul and I have a conflict on the 25th.
You have a conflict?
Yeah.
Oh,
yes,
do
I. Both of us, actually.
Okay.
What other date could we use? Because I would like Paul to be here.
So,
it's the 25th.
When's the election?
18th. 18th.
That's why. The 20th? Thursday?
Is
that a court night?
I was going to say, is that court? That might be.
I can do Thursday.
I'm going to check that. Give me a second. It might be the week after.
That's
court.
Not good for me.
Not good?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well, I mean,
go. What are you going to take a picture of?
Yeah.
We'll do a formal sign-up sheet.
Okay.
So we have the names and what their comments are, and we'll have to address the board. And if it's something you can respond to or quickly, yeah, go ahead. But you know, sometimes we don't want to do a 4-hour back and forth.
Yeah. I'm working on a lobby box.
That's all
you need.
The 20th or
the
20th and 27th.
The 20th
and 27th.
So March 20th.
No.
Can't be
what date's open, it looks good. What's the day after tomorrow?
Yeah, the 19th will be Wednesday.
19th.
I can do that.
Nineteenth?
Can you do the 19th?
19th, right?
No, I've gone into it.
So the last 20th.
Alright, so the meeting will be March 19th.
No, he can't do it.
Oh, well.
Until the 22nd.
I'm gone until the 22nd.
When are you here then?
I won't be here from 7th to the 22nd.
7th to the 22nd.
Yeah, I thought it was on the 25th, so I made everything work with that date.
I hear you.
What about the 24th and the 26th?
Yeah.
24th would be on Monday, 26th would be Wednesday. So there's the workshop, the 26th, but there's been managed, so that doesn't.
So the 26th would work? And that's what, Wednesday?
If that works, are they?
I'm good.
I have a collaborative ZBA, but I don't know if they'll have business, so I could do that. They can get, they can get by without me once.
Dom, 26th?
March 26th.
March 26th at 7:00 by my watch.
The hearing is that taking the place of the planning board meeting?
Hmm?
Is that taking the place of the planning board meeting?
The public hearing?
Yeah.
Will be during the meeting?
During the meeting.
The whole meeting, yeah, the whole meeting will be done.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said the 20.
Sixth. Would be the same night as the workshop.
Alright, so everybody's all set?
Yes, thank you.
March 26th, 7:00.
Village board works.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneous.
Okay, thank you so much.
Alright, Judy, we'll keep it.
I know, we're kinda limited here. Several years straight.
So it's a Wednesday.
Did you get that?
Yep.
So, I have.
All favor?
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye.
Propose?
Rob, I have one question. When we approved the high cost side, we did that with one part per unit.
Did we close?
Yeah, you have some ability to waive or reduce.
Plus, that's sort of, isn't the other part of that building grandfathered in to some extent?
Yeah, you can't.
I mean, granted, that was my first thing because it's right around the corner from there.
Yeah, they were just thinking because the garage was already there, the whole thing was.
But there are two spots in front of the building.
That's fine.
Because at first I thought they were gonna use them.
I know.
That's where you play basketball.
We'll send it to, we'll like it and then.
Yes, they do.
Night for a moment?